Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on quantitative easing right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can we do to protect our lives, our liberties, and our properties from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, zoning and planning, and the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out our substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that you and I have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this thing called private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this private business thing. You know, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. All right, we've been talking about quantitative easing. What that means in plain language is that it's inflation. It's the creation of money right out of thin air. Now, it used to be we printed this money. In the old days when they created inflation, way, way back, you know, when we still had coin, what they would do is they would take a Spanish milled dollar, which started out at 480 grains of 3/9 fine silver. And so that goes on for a while, and the government decides that it needs more money. So what they do is they reduce the fineness of the silver. From 999 fine, they go down to 925 fine, or like the Canadians do, they go down to 800 fine. So out of an ounce of silver that they claim is in the coin, 925 means that it's about, oh, 0.75% short. At 800 fine, it's 20% short. You see where we're going here? At 900 fine, it would be 10% short. Well, then as time progresses along, they say, well, what we got to do here is we got to make these coins circulating coins, and so we'll put 10% copper on. That'll make them harder, see, and then they'll last longer. So you take a look at the old worn-out coins in a bag of junk silver, and you'll see how much wear is on them. That's with the 10% copper in them. So then after a while, they get a little more sophisticated, and they came up with paper, and they said, hey, let's give you a piece of paper here in place of the silver dollar. See, then they can just print up 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 of these paper dollars instead of having to go out here and dig up, you know, 1, 5, 10, 20, 50, or 100 ounces of silver, which, you know, takes a lot of labor. Now we're even more sophisticated. We've got electronic money now. So our government just goes out here and plugs that into a computer with a stroke of a computer key. They just create millions and billions of dollars. But at the same time that they're creating all these millions and billions of dollars, they are not creating millions and billions of loaves of bread, jars of pickles, or mayonnaise, which is what these pieces of paper represent. And so as time progresses along, they get more sophisticated, and so then we get into international trade. Then we have the Chinese working for $2 a day producing these goods, and we buy them, and we give them worthless pieces of paper called bonds, and we say, hey, take these bonds over here, and someday we'll ship you Caterpillar tractors and Dell computers. And so these foreign governments, they take this paper in, and they buy, sell, and trade with it, and they use it just like they would money. Until finally there comes a point in time when, and this is where we're at right now with the global financial crisis and quantitative easing, when we can no longer ship enough of the Caterpillar tractors and the Dell computers. At some point in time, the other government gets to the point where they say, well, we can see that we're getting ripped off. We can see that we're not going to get paid. So we're not going to ship you anymore, or we're going to cut back on, or we're not going to ship as much of. And so the quality goes down. The products are shipped in a lesser quantity, and then this will develop into rationing, which is what we had in World War II. We haven't seen that here in the United States since the end of the Second World War. All right, now with that in mind, with this thing called quantitative easing, what we're doing here is inflating, and it works. There's no two ways about it. I wouldn't deny it. But it doesn't work forever. It's unsustainable, and it comes to an end. And it comes to an end in a typically a violent way in revolution. But even if it's not a violent change, then what's going to happen over the long haul, there's going to be a lot of people get wiped out, and there's going to be a lot of misery, a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, as it's described in Scripture. Now, there's other newsletter writers, and so I want to bring another one in here by the name of Bill Buckler. Bill Buckler puts out a newsletter called The Privateer. He comes out of Queensland, Australia. I suspect that he's an American expatriate moved to Australia. I don't know that positively, but I suspect it. But write this down. It's called theprivateer.com. You know, it's www.the. Now, put a hyphen between the and privateer, because he's got a hyphen in there, .com. And you can go to capt@the-privateer.com, and that's their email address. And so if you get that down, I'll give it to you once more. I'm going to show you here three or four pages here on quantitative easing. Now, the reason that I recommend this newsletter, it's 12 pages, comes out twice a month, costs $180 a year in Australian money, and their money is worth a little less than ours. But, you know, if you send him $180, he puts you on the list here. And it comes right over the computer, comes right in your email box, and you'll get it twice a month. This is the best guy for little guys like us, bottom feeders, because he explains in layman's terms, and I'm going to show you how easy it is to read this newsletter. Unlike some newsletters now that are written for professionals and investment analysts and economists and things like that, he doesn't use the acronym letters without explaining what they are. And then when we get into the gist of it, he's an educator. This is the only newsletter that's in the education business. This guy is an educator. Franklin Sanders is a storyteller, and Bob Chapman is an economist and an investor, but he's an economist. And this guy is an educator, and I recommend him very highly. There's another story here that we're going to cover, which is written by Joel Skousen, who's more in the political world. He's more of a politician, but he's good too. It's called World Affairs Brief, and it's Joel M. Skousen. So if you were to go to, let's see what Skousen's name and number is. I don't see anything on here to subscribe. The weekly email printed edition, and somebody sends these to me. I get a lot of these from listeners. If you've got one and you like it, send me a copy of it. Let me see what it looks like. This is Joel M. Skousen. I think if you do a Google search and look for World Affairs Brief or Joel M. Skousen, spelled Skousen, I think that you'll get an address or a phone number or something there that you can make contact with. They're all good, and I recommend them. And I tell my students, I say, you need to subscribe to one or two. I like to subscribe to three. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. So in order for us to counter the Katie Couric's on the CBS Evening News, we need to have the facts at hand. And the facts at hand are for you personally, not for anybody else. I'm not suggesting that you go out here and run around on your soapbox here trying to get people to vote for this or that. What we're trying to do is survive ourselves. And you need to do that at the family level. So wherever you are, either an individual or a family, there's survival out there for you and me personally, individually. And I don't think you're going to save your county, your state, or your nation, but I think you can save yourself. And you can save yourself financially. You can save yourself politically. You can save yourself economically. It's just a matter of knowing what to do and how to do it and about when. And these guys are pretty darn accurate. You know that? And that's because it doesn't take, you really don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure out that if you spend more than you make, you'll go bankrupt. You know, it happens with people and individuals. It happens with companies, and it happens with states and cities, and it happens with nations and empires. And that's where the world is today. There are massive changes coming. There's going to be great chaos and dislocation coming. And what we want to do is to live through this with as little pain, suffering, and anguish as is possible. So let's take a look here at the privateer. In the Global Report on page 1, it's entitled The Manufacturing of Money. And he starts off by saying the difference between the terms lie and terminological exactitude. Did you get that word there? Terminological inexactitude. All right, I'm going to underline that. It's merely a matter of the number of syllables employed. The first is short, sharp, and to the point. It's a lie. But the second term rolls off the tongue while obscuring the meaning of what is being discussed. And that's the purpose behind a word like terminological inexactitude. And that's exactly the purpose for quantitative easing. It's a lie, but it makes it more palatable. Now, a lie is a deception, and deception is going to cost you a lot of money. And that's just where reality is at. If you believe your government, if you believe the lies, if you believe what's being promoted here on the CBS Evening News, this is going to cause you some grief, maybe a lot of grief. Now, in matters of today's political and especially economic policy, new and improved terms, which purport to describe pretty cut and dried actions, are coined on an almost daily basis. For instance, price stability, underline that, is ever so much more polite than price fixing. So what they're talking about here, when you hear the word price stability, that means price fixing. Now, another term, troubled asset relief program. I'll underline that one. Troubled asset relief program. They put an acronym on that. It's called the TARP, T-A-R-P program. It brings forward pictures of a much more noble undertaking than does bailing out the banks. Okay? So we're going to call that bailing out the banks. That's what TARP means. And then there is the comparatively new term called quantitative easing. That's the subject of our topic here this week. How much more dignified a term that is than the old term printing money? That's what that means. We're just going to print money. Which describes the process of buying debt issued by government with money created for that purpose right out of thin air. So that's what we're doing. Now, the reason that this causes inflation and then ultimately hyperinflation, which brings about the total destruction of the currency, total destruction of your savings and of your investments. So manufacturing money the traditional way is the second headline. And he goes on to say that every central bank has a controlling rate of interest. And what this rate controls is the ease with which its banking system can lend money into existence. So in the case of the U.S. Federal Reserve, the controlling rate is the Fed funds rate. And by law, banks must keep a reserve with the Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C. The Fed then uses what are called open market operations to maintain a rate of interest at which these reserves can be borrowed by banks which want to make new loans. And so if the Fed wants the banks to lend more, it manipulates the Fed funds rate downward. If it wants them to lend less, it either manipulates the rate upwards or, in very rare cases, ceases intervening in the markets altogether for a short period of time. Now, traditionally, a central bank facilitates new lending to meet the needs of business by lowering its controlling rate. That creates a demand for new loans which did not exist before. So if a bank can borrow reserves at a lower rate of interest, it can offer a lower rate as its method of meeting the needs of business. This is what is traditionally known as monetary policy. Now, going back to my original comment, do you see what I'm telling you here? This fellow, Bill Buckler, is more of an educator. And on the opening page here, he's simply explaining these terms in layman's language. So when you're reading the newspaper and the Federal Reserve Chairman comes out and says, we're going to practice a price stability, troubled asset relief program, quantitative easing, what they're really telling you is we're fixing prices, bailing out the banks, and printing new money. See how simple that is? And it's explained to you in layman's language. Hell, even us dumb truck drivers can figure that one out, can't we? All right. Now, manufacturing money wholesale. By the mid-1990s, traditional monetary policy no longer worked in Japan, but it still seemed to work almost everywhere else. But by the end of 2008, most of the developed world found itself in the same condition that Japan had been in for almost 20 years. They had reached the end of the monetary policy road, so they resorted to quantitative easing, and they proclaimed the existence of a recovery. Now, the recovery is being exposed as the phantom that it always was. And on August the 10th, the Fed announced a record second round of quantitative easing. Well, why now? Well, there are a number of reasons. All right, now remember that this is the privateer. The privateer is put out by William A.M. Buckler, and they're located at Post Office Box 2004 in Noosa Heads, Queensland, Australia, 4567. All right, that's their snail mail address, but for most of you, you will probably be looking at www.the-privateer.com. That's a simple one. Just put a hyphen between the and privateer. It's the privateer. Pull them up on the internet. Now, it's $180 a year, but for $25, you can get a trial subscription of five issues. Five issues for $25. You can only do that once, he says, and I think that you'll be marvelously surprised. This is for all of you beginners out there. If you're a beginner and you don't know much about economics and politics and international geopolitics, this is the newsletter for you. Start here. The privateer. Let's go on to page two. Now, we're talking about quantitative easing over here because this is leading to hyperinflation. And there's another email here that you want to get hold of, another website. It's called kitco.com, kitco, K-I-T-C-O.com. There's a number of free. See, these newsletter writers, they put out these freebies. That's so that you'll subscribe to their newsletter. And they're all good. And I'm not knocking any of them. I'm just saying that you can't subscribe to every newsletter that's out there. There's probably 1,000. And they all cost you around $100 and something to $200 a year. And then you yourself will decide which ones are better than others. And I was talking to a young student the other day, and I had recommended that he get the International Forecaster. He did, and then he let it drop. He dropped his subscription. Well, maybe the international forecaster was too much for a novice. But I'll guarantee you that the privateer is not too much for any novice. I mean, if you've got an IQ down around 80, 90, about like mine, you know, a little above the speed limit, but not too much, you can understand the privateer. You don't have to be concerned about, you know, I've got to be smart in order to understand this. Now, remember the purpose for understanding the news is to fulfill what Jesus told us in Matthew 24. He said, "Watch, therefore, that these events don't come upon you unawares." Watch international geopolitics. They're important for all of us. And that's where this parable of the ten virgins comes in, because, you know, five of them are wise and they're prepared, and five of them aren't. Five of them don't know which end is up. So let's see if we can stay on top of which end is up, so we can salvage or save as much of our assets and as much of our wealth as is possible. And these underground newsletters is, in my view, the only way you're going to do that. If you're following Katie Couric and Brian Williams, you're going right down the primrose path. Now, I watch the news every night so that I can watch Katie and Brian and see what my government wants me to know. And then I go measure that up against the privateer and the international forecaster or the money changer, World Affairs Brief. And here's one here called the Golden Jackass. It's just goldenjackass.com. That's Jim Willie, another dynamite newsletter writer. And he writes and puts this stuff out free. Now, he's got a newsletter. You got to pay for that. But let me tell you, Willie is always good. Always good. Now, let's take a look at the recovery that never was. Now, most people are starting to wake up to the fact, going into the elections here in the United States, that there is no recovery. Okay. Well, there never has been a recovery. But we have been talking about it, and Brian Williams and Katie and everybody are talking about double dip. You're already in the double dip. And you needed to have known that 3 or 4 months ago. By the time the mainstream media tells you what's going on, it's already happened and it's too late to take any intelligent action. You should have sold your real estate in 2006, no later than 2007. By September of 2008, it was way past time. And all of these guys were telling us that. They're saying, hey, listen, real estate's peaked, we're in a bubble. Now, they're telling us now that the bond market has peaked, it's in a bubble, and you want to be out of bonds. You should be out of stocks, bonds, and U.S. dollars, in past tense. You should have been out of that a couple of years ago. Now, if you're still in those paper assets, it's going to come back and bite you. But I'm a little different than the average Joe Sixpack, you know, talk show host. I'm not here trying to persuade you that I'm right and you're wrong and you need to follow me. Because I don't care whether you lose your hiney or not. It's no skin off my back. So I get paid for disseminating information as an educator, just like this fellow, Bill Buckler. You know, he gets paid for disseminating information. And that's why I'm covering Buckler, because Buckler now is number one, in my view, for educating those of us that are ignorant. So no matter how ignorant you are, this is the place to start. It's called the Privateer. The-privateer.com. The recovery that never was. The Fed reached the end of its monetary policy in December of 08 when it cut its Fed's fund rate to a target range of 0 to 0.025%. As this was being done, Mr. Bernanke started making louder and louder noises about the possible need for other policies. Okay, other policies to break the back of the recession. Mr. Bernanke had long known that these other policies, or what these other policies were. He is, after all, a self-styled depression expert. And in the mid-1990s, when he was professor at Princeton, Mr. Bernanke co-authored Macroeconomics. That was an economic textbook still widely used. And here is a very telling quote from his book called Macroeconomics by Ben Bernanke. Now listen to this socialist. I'm going to put brackets around his quote here. Governments that want to finance their deficit through seigniorage do not simply print money, but they use an indirect procedure. First, the Treasury authorizes government borrowing equal to the amount of the budget deficit, and a correspondent quantity of new government bonds are printed and sold. However, the new government bonds are not sold to the public. Instead, the Treasury asks or requires the central bank to purchase the $10 billion in new bonds. The central bank pays for its purchase of the new bonds by printing $10 billion in new currency, which it then gives to the Treasury in exchange for the bonds. Okay, so our government doesn't need a nickel's worth of tax. They don't need any income tax or any taxes whatsoever. The purpose for the income tax is to take this inflated money out of circulation. That's the purpose behind it. Nothing more, nothing less. The government runs on credit, always has, does now, and always will. They just print it up and go out in the marketplace and spend it. And right now, we're going to have a budget deficit of about, I think it's $1.5 or $1.75 trillion this year, which just ended, I believe, or will just end, I guess, on October the 1st, the end of this month. So the bottom line to this is that the government just goes out, prints the money, goes out in the marketplace, spends it, and buys whatever they want. They buy aircraft carriers, they buy airplanes, they buy food, clothing, and shelter. They finance and buy gasoline and oil and whatever they want. And as they do that, it takes more and more of that stuff off the shelves and jacks the price up for you and us, you and me, to buy it. That's called inflation. Now, what we're talking here by quantitative easing, these guys are printing money by astronomical proportions. Now, they haven't released it into the public yet, but they're going to. See, one of these days when they have to meet their Social Security requirements, they're not going to cut back because they're short of money. They're just going to print it up and mail the checks out, and then you people are going to go out to Walmart and spend it and take the bread and the pickles and mayonnaise off the shelf. And then we're going to find out that we've got so many people unemployed that aren't producing bread, pickles, and mayonnaise that we're going to have to ration it. Ration it. Shortages. Tuck that one away in your heart. Now, seigniorage in this context is another example of the art of euphemism. That's using one word to describe another. For instance, I wouldn't say to you, let's go out and commit adultery. I'd say, let's go out and fool around a little bit tonight. These euphemisms are so beloved of all those who are tasked with the running economies of the lives of people who live in them. They want to run our lives by running our economy. The term originally meant the amount, minor but not insignificant, it cost to mint this coined money. From there, the term progressed to mean the amount, insignificant to the vanishing point, that it cost to print the money. Today, the vast majority of all the money in the world is created by pressing a few keys on a keyboard. It is effectively cost-free. So it doesn't cost anything to produce this money. And that's why they don't want to go back to gold and silver. I mean, gold and silver cost money to produce. In fact, the last time I saw some numbers on this, it's up around $400 to $450 an ounce to produce. Well, who in hell wants to produce, you know, $1,200 worth of new money, an ounce of gold, by spending $400 when you can produce the same $1,200 worth of new money by just punching in the key? I mean, this is a license to steal like you people have never dreamed of before. And the beneficiaries of this are all the politicians, big business, the big banking industries, and so on. And then, in the end, you know, you and I, the little guys down here, the bottom feeders at the bottom of the pond, we're the guys that have to pay for all that, in the end. And that's what's coming down upon us, payday. And then when this payday comes down upon us, you can rest assured that Barack Obama and his wife are going to be jet-setting in a 747 for an evening in Chicago at your expense. Meanwhile, back on the farm, though, you and I have to worry about paying rent. That's where the bottom line of this comes down to. Now, God love him, I don't, you know, I wouldn't deny Barack Obama and his wife an evening out, you know, at the opera. And if they need to fly in a 747 to get there, you know, more power to them. But I don't want to pay for it. And in fact, I quit. I'm not paying for that crap. You can pay for it, but I'm not going. Now, the Fed's monetary policy hasn't worked because in the real world, it takes two to make a loan. It takes a willing lender. And it's not just sufficient that there be a willing lender, but there must also be a willing borrower. And today, the only entity in the United States which remains a willing borrower is the U.S. government, and the only entity to which most people are still willing to lend is to the U.S. government. The problem here is that no genuine economic recovery ever has been or can ever be brought about when the government is the only one borrowing the money. Boys and girls, 70% of all the jobs are created by small business. You know, it's the mom-and-pop operations, you know. It's the McDonald's store down here that hires 10, 15 guys. People who are running businesses that employ under 100 people employ 70% of the people in the country, well, 65%. And then 25% are employed by Ford Motors and the big manufacturers, 10% by government. If there's going to be an economic recovery, it's going to be down here at the local mom-and-pop stores. It isn't going to be with Ford Motors. It ain't going to be by government hiring another 200,000. Hell, those are both depressing. When the government hires somebody, you and I have to pay them. So ironically, it was the European sovereign debt crisis, purposely induced by the United States rating agency, by the way, that brought this to a head and led to this newfound determination, at least on paper, for the European governments to start cutting back on debt and deficits. This now has left the U.S. government all on its own as the one major nation still trying to stimulate. The Fed's announcement on August 10th has put this parting of the ways into sharp focus, and so have some of the financial statistics recently released in Washington, D.C. Let me put a mark right here and give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Quite the opposite. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile to us. They could be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you've got a complaint, it's with me, not them. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at quantitative easing. What that means in the long run is hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is the worst of both worlds. It's not only bad and creates depression, it also drives the goods and services out of the marketplace. If I had my druthers, as I've said before, I would opt for a deflationary depression. It would be better for all of us. It's bad. It's like getting a whipping. You know, it's like getting a whipping. But it's like getting a whipping with your pants on. My dad, once in a while, you know, he'd say, pull your pants down. Oh, my God. That was the worst news that I could have heard. Not only am I going to get a whipping, this one's going to hurt like, you know, like only a belt on bare skin can hurt. So it can get worse, and I think that's what's coming with hyperinflation. So that's why I think we should get ready for it. You personally, you and your family, you as an individual, you can do a lot to alleviate the punishment coming down or the events coming down, whether you think it's a punishment or not. Now listen to this double dip. You know, you've been listening to this double dip recession. Well, here's what Buckler has to say about that. He said, on August the 11th, the day after the Fed announced its second sojourn into quantitative easing, well, the Commerce Department announced that in the month of June, the U.S. trade deficit had climbed by a record $7.9 billion, or 19%, to about $50 billion for the month. Now, this was the biggest monthly deficit since October of 2008. Now, on July 30th, the Commerce Department released a preliminary estimate of about 2.5% growth for the second quarter. In the wake of the trade figure, commentators were saying that the revised figure would be at least 1% and perhaps 2% below that estimate. And they were also saying that a return to negative growth and negative growth figures for the second half of the year was an increasing possibility. Now, a report for the week ending on August the 13th showed that weekly applications for jobless benefits had spiked to 484,000, the highest level in 6 months. Now, there is a new emerging underclass in the United States. They're dubbed the 99ers. These are the people who have used up the 99 weeks, that's 2 years, of jobless benefits available to those who are unemployed. Now, there are already more than 1 million of these people, those Americans who are working or doing the opposite of what their government wants of them. The latest report on U.S. consumer borrowing shows that in the second quarter of 2010, the total amount fell by 1.5% from the previous quarter, and that was down 6.5% from its peak in the third quarter of 2008. In 2 years, the number of open credit cards has gone down 23%. Now, it takes two to make a loan. So Americans are paying off their debts. They're not stimulating the economy by buying. Small business, since they're not getting any business, aren't hiring. And the banks aren't lending to the small businesses, they're lending to the big businesses, which only employ 25% of the workforce to start with. And those big businesses are exporting the jobs, business as usual, to India, China, Taiwan, the Philippines, just like they have been over the last 10 or 15 years. And that leaves the unemployment rate at 28.2%. 28.2%. And then they're telling us it's 9.6%, which isn't a lie. They're telling us the truth. That is the U5 unemployment rate. What they're not telling you is the unemployment rate with the U1, U2, U3, U4, and U6. They're not telling you that. And when you add all that up, it tallies 28.2%. Hey, boys and girls, the double dip is already here. Wake up. Let's smell the coffee. Now, money manufacturing 101, the U.S. Treasury market. Now, the Fed lowered their controlling rate, remember, to 0 to 0.025% on December the 16th, 2008. Well, by the end of that week, the market for longer-term U.S. Treasury debt paper had reached the highest level in its history. On the week ending on December 19th, 2008, the T-bond market index hit an all-time high of 143. Now, back in April of 2010, those same T-bonds had slumped to 114. Now, the rule on the bond market is this, and that prices and yields go in opposite directions. The catalyst for the slump in longer-term treasuries was the simple fact that in the period between December of 08 and April of 10, the yield on these 10-year paper notes all but doubled. It rose from 2.05% to 3.99%, just about doubled. Now, in April of 2010 was the height of the European sovereign debt crisis and the period when confidence in a U.S. recovery peaked. The discussion was all about plans to roll back the stimulus and bring the Fed's balance sheet back down to normal, that is, the pre-September to October 2008 levels, now that the recovery was a done deal. Well, that was a mere 4 months ago. So now, by August of 2010, the U.S. T-bond market has rebounded from its April lows, and the yield on the 10-year Treasury had plunged from that 4% to 2.5%. And as a result, the T-bond index had rebounded from 114 to 134, its highest level since late January of 09. Meanwhile, the yield on shorter-term two-year paper had hit all-time lows below the 0.5% level. That's one-half of 1%. Now, the yield on U.S. Treasury bonds began to accelerate downwards in the lead-up to the August 10th FOMC meeting as speculation grew that the Fed would restart the buying program that it had ended in October of 2009. The yield fell even faster than the FOMC announced that was on the plan, or that this was the plan. And it was and has continued to accelerate downward as expectations grow that the Fed will start an all-out quantitative easing program once the relapse into recession can no longer be disguised. So we've got this relapse back into recession, and it's already here. We're in negative growth. But remember, a recession isn't counted until you have 6 months. That's two consecutive quarters of negative growth. So we'll have one quarter of negative growth in this fourth quarter. They'll probably disguise the third quarter. It's actually negative growth by 1%. That's in the June through September period. It's down below. It's minus one. They'll disguise that. And they'll say, well, it's not very good, but it's still positive. They may not be able to disguise the October through December downturn, but it'll still take another 3 months after that, January, February, and March, before you actually get word that there is a double-dip recession. So that isn't going to happen until about April of next year. All right. So be forewarned right now. You're already in recession. The double dip is here. Unemployment is going to surge, and we're going to have more quantitative easing. In other words, these guys have just a one-track mind. They're socialists, and they're going to print, and they're going to print, and they're going to print. And as a result, there's going to be shortages. And so what you need to do is to make sure you got a four-year supply of food, a four-year supply of clothes, a four-year supply of housing already on hand. If you don't have it, well, then you're going to do without it. That's all. You'll stand in line, share the shortage, just like the Russians do. It's like everybody else in the world that practices communism. So if you want to get ahead of the power curve, forget about gold and silver and forget about, you know, investing in stocks and bonds and retirement and Winnebagos and concentrate on wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil and shoes and pants and clothes. And you ladies out there, instead of buying, you know, those designer high heels with 4-inch spikes, concentrate on some clodhoppers, something that you can really walk around in the garden with, because that's probably going to produce more for you if you're out in the garden producing tomatoes and peppers next year than if you're out here putting out these applications for employment. You know, your resume. That's the word I'm looking for, resume. I'm telling you, as an old-timey employer, when I get somebody's resume, you know, I glance down this thing and I say, God, what a waste of time. This guy's really been wasting his life. I've never hired anybody off of a resume, and if I did, I can't remember when. And I don't think anybody else does either. Word of mouth is 10 times better. And it's even better yet if you go hire yourself a job and show somebody what you can do. Then you can actually see and you can weigh and measure and observe what's been done here. Now, bottom line here is that nobody wants to fight the Fed. And this policy has already been put into operation. And bear this in mind, that no matter how the election comes out, all that's going to be changed here is Team B is going to be replaced by Team A. And then you're going to have the excesses of the Bush administration repeated by a Republican Congress. The best thing that you can hope for is that the Republican Congress will stymie the socialist president and stop him in his tracks for the next 2 years. Now, that might be of some benefit. It might give us a little more time to get ready for the big kahuna. I'm not sure that it will, but it might. The big kahuna is already here upon us, and it started in 2008, so wake up to reality here. That's where it started. It takes 3.5 years now to reach bottom. That's what happened from 1929 to 1933. We're about 18 months from the bottom, so we have not reached bottom yet. And furthermore, this time around, it might take 4 or 5 years to reach bottom. But in the past, it's always taken 3.5 years. And that goes back to 1907, 1893, and so on. We've had depressions here before caused by this paper money. This isn't the first and ain't going to be the last. Now, nobody wants to fight the Fed was the headline in the CNNmoney.com article, which was published on August the 16th. And according to the article, some Treasury bond investors are now betting on a slide back to the dark days of 2008 and early 2009. Now, what is the catalyst? Well, it's the Fed's announcements of this quantitative easing round two on August the 10th. The Fed is said to have decided to keep the size of its balance sheet from shrinking and to start buying treasuries again in order to keep longer-term U.S. interest rates low. It is certainly true that the Fed wants to keep longer-term U.S. rates low, and it's also true that the Fed claims that they're being given, or driven rather, by concern for the U.S. economy as a whole. Fixed long-term 30-year U.S. mortgage rates are already at all-time lows. The Federal Housing Administration, called the FHA, conforming rate below U.S. $417,000 houses or mortgages. The 30-year money is being offered at 4%. The yield on U.S. Treasury 30-year debt paper only dipped below 4% on August the 11th. In essence, a U.S. fixed mortgage in the U.S. is now deemed as risk-free as an equivalent loan to the government. Now, that's a first. We have always thought that the government was the safest investment. Don't believe it. The U.S. government's bonds are all going to fail. They'll collapse and you'll get paid nothing. Well, let me rephrase that. You will be paid 100 cents on the dollar. You know, just picture this. Just because the government doesn't have any money doesn't mean they're not going to pay it. They'll just print up the check and send it to you. You'll go out in the marketplace and spend it. That'll take all of the goods off the shelves and then you'll have rationing. That's how simple that is. No fuss, no muss. And that's where the rubber meets the road. It's how many jars of mayonnaise are actually on the shelf. You know, it's how many jars of pickles do you have in your pantry? Now today, we all believe, because the last time I was in a Walmart store and the shelves had plenty of goods on them, we all believe that the money in our pockets today can be translated into pickles and mayonnaise tomorrow when we go shopping at the Walmart store. Put that out of your mind, boys and girls. In every economy that's collapsed in the past under hyperinflation, the goods are gone. The goods are gone. And here in America, we've never seen that before. I saw it one time in a flood in Humboldt County where the goods were gone, temporarily, I think it was for about a week. Nothing to brag about. But when the goods are gone, like they are over in Pakistan right now with 20 million people destitute and homeless, now that's a disaster. That's a catastrophe in the wings. That's another story for another day. Now let's flip the page over here and take a look at another section over here. Remember, we're talking about the privateer. The growing danger of a buyer's strike. You know, for most of the month of August to date, the big international story in the context of U.S. Treasury's borrowing capacity has been the news that China is reducing its holdings of Treasury debt. And on August the 16th, it was reported that China's holdings declined for a second straight month in June, falling 2.7% at the height of the European sovereign debt crisis in April. The Chinese holding of U.S. Treasury debt had reached a new high of $900 billion. That's 9/10 of a trillion. By the end of June, these holdings were down to $843 billion. That's down $56 billion, or 6% in 2 months. All right, now what's going on here in China is that the Chinese are unloading. People now that have been holding these bonds, U.S. government bonds, are unloading them. That sends all of us little guys a signal. When the big guys are unloading the bonds, it says, hey, these bonds are risky. They're risky. Now, the Chinese have already unloaded all of their Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac bonds. See, they had about, I think it was $100 billion worth of them. They unloaded them all. We saw that in the Willie, you know, Golden Jackass report. I don't know who they unloaded them to. I'm going to write Willie and ask him, who bought those? Now, keep in mind that the Chinese now are the biggest producer. China is the biggest producer of gold in the world. They have surpassed South Africa. The communists and socialists in South Africa have run their gold mining industry right into the ground, which is, you know, good for gold, because the less gold there is out there, the higher the price has got to go. Now, don't count on gold bailing you out. Count on wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Count on being out of debt. if you're in debt, and a lot of times we get letters here and they'll say, oh my God, Mr. Gordon, they're kind of plaintive, you know, and they say, they're foreclosing on my house. What are you going to do to help me save my house? Boys and girls, when the bank forecloses and takes that albatross off of your back, that's the best thing that's happened to you probably in the last 30 years. Best thing that can happen to you is that you get out of debt. And one of the ways you get out of debt is to get out from under that mortgage. That mortgage has an interest-bearing note. They'll call it a promissory note. Remember you signed that? You probably don't, but you did. And then that interest over there is doubling. It doubles. You know, the rule of 72, I explained that to you a time or two here. The rule of 72 doubles. When you buy a house at 6% interest, you buy one for yourself and 1.25 for the banker. Hey, wake up here. First of all, you're paying retail. That's double what the house costs. Then you're going to buy one for you and 1.25 for the banker. I think we can do better than that. If we're going to make money, if we're going to survive this, we've got to get out of debt. So with my business school, the first thing I tell a student is, hey, we've got to get you up to zero COD. These people are buried $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 in debt, and they want to come here to business school and not make money. You can't make money when you're in debt. The debtor is servant to the lender. Come on, let's wake up here. Now, the last resort of last resorts over here. At the height of the financial crisis in 2008, remember, the financial big guns, you know, in the world was China. China's out of the marketplace. We're on our own. This is quantitative easing at its best. This quantitative easing at its best is the U.S. Fed, which buys these treasury bonds and prints up an equal amount of dollars for the U.S. government to spend. That's the way that game has been played. All right, now that's coming to an end at some indefinite time in the future with rationing and shortages. Tuck it away in your heart. Meanwhile, remember, this is the privateer. The privateer is www.the-privateer.com. Make sure you get this five-issue, once-only offer for $25. Take $25, get a postal money order, stick it in there, and send it off to the publisher at Post Office Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. Again, that's P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. And I'm out of time. I've got to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School, the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. I've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.